live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Go ahead and drop it. All right, welcome to the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, John Iadarola, Jordan Yule. We got a power panel on Friday night here. Usually I'm a little bit more in a jovial mood when we do a power panel, but I am not tonight for reasons you're about to see. I wanna thank Jordan for joining us. He's of course host of Deep Dive with Jordan Yule on our Twitch channel. You guys gotta check that out every Tuesday and Thursday, twitch.tv/TYT. So Jordan, great to have you on, brother.
Thanks for having me, Cenk.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Guys, the first story is so important. We're going to get straight to it. And boy, do we need your help and participation in it. All right. So yesterday we told you that the parliamentarian had ruled that the $15 minimum wage does not pass muster for reconciliation and must be taken out of the COVID relief bill. Now, we clarified, unlike most of the media, that the parliamentarian actually has no power whatsoever. It is just gives an advisory opinion. It's not an actual ruling. The person who does the ruling is actually the presiding chair of the Senate, which normally is the vice president. So Kamala Harris is going to have a huge part in this conversation. Now, once the parliamentarian gave her so-called ruling, all of the Democrats immediately gave up on $15 minimum wage. As things stand now, they are going to be taken, that provision is going to be taken out of the bill, and we will not get $15 minimum wage for at least 4 years. Now, there is a way to prevent it. There are four steps here. I'm going to walk through all four steps, and you will see that if we do this, it's actually very doable to keep it in the bill and to actually win on this issue. But it requires courage from progressives, and then it requires us to put public pressure on some of our allies, and then eventually to the Biden administration and Chuck Schumer. So step one is unfortunately right now the most important step, and where we're going to have to call out Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is the chair of the budget committee. The chair of the budget committee decides what is in the COVID relief bill. Bernie Sanders' current plan is to take $15 minimum wage out of the COVID relief bill. That is a terrible idea. He should not do that. If corporate Democrats are going to vote against it, let them vote against it. But doing it on their behalf, I cannot overstate what a bad idea that is. In that scenario, that right now is what is going to happen unless we change it together, Bernie would kill the $15 minimum wage on behalf of Joe Manchin and Joe Biden. He should not do that. So this is step one. I'm going to get to the other steps in a second. But guys, I need you to immediately participate. We've got a campaign, we've got a petition, and we've got hashtags. We must do all of the above. And the campaign is called Don't Kill It, Bernie. Because yes, step one, indisputably, it is a matter of fact, is that the budget chair decides if it goes in the bill. That is Bernie Sanders. That was the whole point of him being budget chair. If he's going to take out $15 minimum wage, that means he will take out every provision that Joe Manchin and Joe Biden are opposed to. That means we will get no progressive priorities passed, none. the $15 minimum wage was literally the bare minimum. It was the first ask of progressives. So Bernie, you've got to keep it in the bill. Because if he does not keep it in the bill, it's over. That hashtag fight for 15, there is no more fight. That means progressives surrendered. I'm being honest with you guys. Our job is to do the news. Those are the facts of how this process works. So go to the petition, all right? And here, let's put it up for you guys. And it's simply called Don't Kill It, Bernie. And what it's saying is we'd undersigned have a clear message. Don't take it out of the bill. It's 100% your call on whether you keep it in the bill or take it out of the bill. Do not do that, because if you take it out of the bill and you kill it, then we will not be able to get back to it for 4 long years, and there's no reason for it. So, and if you're tweeting about this at all, please use hashtag Don't Kill It, Bernie, because we must get Senator Sanders to turn around. There are no other steps if he takes it out of the bill. Now, if he keeps it in the bill, now let me walk you through how we could actually win on this. Step two would be, since it's in the bill, the presiding officer of the Senate would have to rule to take it out of the bill. So Kamala Harris, who in her role as the VP would normally be the presiding officer of the Senate, would have to actively vote with Republicans or side with Republicans. And the parliamentarian, for what it's worth, again, the parliamentarian has no vote, no power, just gave a random opinion on what they think they should do. The Republicans would never care about it. It has no force of law at all. In fact, it's being used as an excuse by Kamala Harris, Chuck Schumer, and the others to kill a provision they were never in favor of. So then we have to put pressure on Kamala Harris to not side with Mitch McConnell. Can we do that? Yes, yes, we can definitely do that. If Chuck Schumer wants to protect Kamala Harris and he puts another senator in as the presiding officer, well, then we'll put pressure on Chuck Schumer. Would he like to continue to be the senator from New York? There are a lot of progressives in New York, very, very strong progressives in New York that could easily take that seat. Not easily, but that could certainly have a shot at taking that seat. So now, here's the most important part. Step three. If she decides to take it out of the bill, there's nothing we can do about it. Kamala Harris and Chuck Schumer will then actively be saying, okay, we killed the $15 minimum wage because we never wanted it in the first place. But if we get past that step and they go, you win, we're keeping it in the bill, then Mitch McConnell would object. Mitch McConnell would then say, I want to appeal the ruling of the chair. Now, here's the great news. Since Joe Manchin and Sinema kept the filibuster, and so did Joe Biden, they would need 60 votes to overrule the chair. So that means they need to break our filibuster to overrule the ruling of the chair. They're not gonna get 60 votes. We win. Okay, there is a step four. But understand, before we go to step four, and step four is awesome, but it right now, understand how simple it is. We have to pressure Bernie to keep it in the bill. Then we have to pressure Manchin, not Manchin, Kamala Harris, and Chuck Schumer to not side with Republicans. My God, as a progressive movement, if we can't do that, what can we do? Do we have any power or don't we have any power? We're about to find out. And then step four is, if the Republicans cannot break the filibuster, then McConnell has one last option. And this is wonderfully ironic. He would have to ask for a 50 vote margin and straight up and down vote to kill the filibuster in regards to the votes of the presiding chair of the Senate. Now, Manchin and Sinema have said that, and Biden have said that the filibuster is the most precious thing in the world to them. So what are they gonna now turn around just to make sure you don't get higher wages, and they're gonna vote to kill the filibuster in this regard? I mean, it would be the most spectacularly hypocritical thing they have ever done. And they've done some pretty hypocritical things. So you put them in a near impossible situation, and it is incredibly doable. But step one is do not surrender. Guys, one last thing before we go to John and Jordan. There's $92 billion on the line. This would be a pay raise for about 30 million Americans. and to the tune of $92 billion every single year. The reason why Biden, Manchin, and the Republicans don't want to do it is because the Chamber of Commerce is dead set against it. They are, those business interests are giant donors to both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And those donors are saying, I want to keep the $92 billion. I don't want to give it to my workers. I want to keep their wages incredibly low. Now go do my bidding. And they do. Now, Bernie is not in that camp, but he's getting pressure from the other Democrats to take it out of the bill. We, in a sense, have to back him up by saying, Bernie, we do not agree. We do not agree. Don't kill it, Bernie. Don't kill it. All right, John and George.
Jordan, why don't I let you go first? I have a few questions I want to ask Cenk, but Jordan, you can go first.
I don't want people to lose sight of this was the moderate proposal. I mean, progressives wanted $2,000 monthly checks. Some people called for retroactive monthly stimulus payments. And when that didn't make it into the bill, moderates held up the minimum wage increase as a compromise. This was what everyone should be excited about. And now you have the Democratic establishment saying, okay, it's too risky. We can't do it. And we hear a lot of pandering about the moral imperative to put your neck out, stick your neck out, especially for members of Congress when they're running for re-election. We hear all of this moral pandering about the things that maybe aren't popular or maybe aren't easy, but they're morally just and righteous. And that's what they'll fight for. Well, now is the time to do that. Now is the time to overthrow unjust systems and regulations and rules and ultimately suggestions from a parliamentarian to fight for what's morally right. I mean, we talked about it on Deep Dive last night for a good amount of time. Most of the chat, myself, we all know somebody who had to literally sell plasma, their own plasma, to make ends meet. Living paycheck to paycheck, half of the country is living paycheck to paycheck, and millions of people cannot afford a $500 emergency. This, while not sufficient, is a huge step in the right direction, and we have to fight for it. And that they're unwilling to do that, or that it's just too difficult and not a priority for them, shows like everything about the Democratic class and in Congress at large. So I think it's great that you're fighting for this. I think TYT members and viewers can absolutely get this across the finish line. But there is a deep systemic issue in this country that must be addressed.
Yeah, I would also say one of the most frustrating things is, like, we know that anytime something like this, there's a possibility of it. There's a million different ways that they can try to retreat from it or postpone it or whatever. Saying that it's because of like a deep and abiding respect for the rules, like that is no. When rules are inconvenient for something you wanna do, you'll avoid them. If you wanna launch airstrikes overseas, damn the procedures, damn the rules and all of that. Wages are a little bit different. But I think there's a few things that we should make explicit that might not be explicit or that some people watching this might not understand. So for instance, Cenk, in a lot of the conversation about the parliamentarians ruling and the negotiations and strategizing that's going on around it, you are saying we won't have this for 4 years, but all of the coverage is saying, well, they'll introduce it as a standalone bill. And if Manchin and Sinema are against it outside of reconciliation, we'll just get rid of the filibuster, which are things that people have been talking about. So why is that not something that people should rely on in this case?
So in the second hour, we're gonna have a fuller conversation about all the different options, but that one in particular, John, at this point stands no chance at all. And understand why it's a trick. Because Manchin and Sinema are saying out of principle, and the media hilariously believes them, they say we will not kill the filibuster under any circumstance. Well, if we go to step four in our plan, we'll find out. My guess is in order to do the bidding of the Chamber of Commerce, they might try to kill the filibuster. Manchin might try to kill it. Okay, so now, but if you say you have to kill it in order to get higher wages for the average American, no way Manchin's gonna do it. And so this is your COVID relief bill. This is really important to understand. The COVID relief bill is a must pass. What are Manchin and Sinema gonna do? They're gonna take down the entire COVID relief bill to make sure that Americans do not get higher wages? No, they're not. Call their bluff. It's insane to fold to that ridiculous bluff. There's no way they're gonna do that. I dare them to do that. There's no way. All of West Virginia and Arizona will be on fire saying you blocked our checks. You blocked our relief because you wanted us to have lower wages. Oh, come on, Bernie. You got to be able to call that bluff. If you can't call that bluff, then you shouldn't be in this game. When they put it as a standalone bill, I love that idea. I wanted it, but it originally, but it's not going to work. They have no avenue of putting pressure, enough pressure on Manchin and Sinema to cave on the filibuster if it's not attached to a must-pass bill like COVID relief.
Yeah. So the other, you talked through a few of the possible next steps that could happen. So what about the possibility? And honestly, with a bill being passed via reconciliation, I don't even know how that might affect this process. But what about Bernie including it, but it either at the committee level or once it's passed beyond the committee, what about the chance of it being amended out or something like that?
No. So listen, there is nothing until Bernie puts it in the bill. If he doesn't put it in the bill, it's already over and it's gone. And we're never going to see it again. If he puts it in the bill, my understanding is that's the bill they're voting on. So if they want to do an amendment and they want to get Manchin and Sinema on the record as saying, no, we're going to actively kill this provision of it and we will make sure that you're for lower wage, everybody understands that we're for lower wages. All right, then we'll have that battle at that point. Okay. But if it's not part of a must pass bill, you have no chance at all.
Okay.
And so, by the way, I want to address one more thing because these are good questions. No More Trigonometry wrote in from our member section. We do this show together. I can't fathom Bernie agreeing to take out the $15 minimum wage unless he has some assurances it'll be done in a separate bill. As I just explained, those assurances would be super empty. It doesn't matter if it's done in a different bill. That bill will not pass. I'm going to tell you the bill that might pass in a second. Hold on. I'm not making excuses for him. It should definitely be left in the bill, and he'd be foolish to believe whatever lies they told him. So guys, I've quadruple checked. There is no genius plan B. The plan B is Romney's going to introduce a bill. Yes, Mitt Romney, to make it $10, not $15. And you get that $10 all the way in 2025 if it passes. And by the way, they have a provision in there that, but you've got to punish immigrants in order to pass that bill. Manchin says, well, maybe we could get it to $11. And by the way, the timeline might be even longer. So $15, the minute Bernie takes it out of the bill, it's gone. We do news. It's important for you to know the truth and the reality. It's gone for 4 long years. I don't care what nonsense assurances they gave Bernie. I can see with my own eyes what their plans are. It's in the press. And their plans are at best $11 way later. And look, if we kept up with the productivity and inflation, it'd be at $23 an hour now. They're robbing you. They're robbing you. $7.25 is just $15,000 a year. If you work every day of the year, Monday through Friday, 40 hours a week, no vacations, you barely make it over $15,000. People cannot live on that. I don't care what state you're in. $15 would move it to $30,000 a year for a full-time job with no vacations. We can't do $30,000 a year. That's what Manchin says. That's what Sinema says. And I can fight them. I cannot stomach Bernie taking it out on their behalf. Hashtag don't kill it, Bernie. Sign the petition. Look, we've done this before. We had a petition something as simple as having Bernie on the show in 2016. He got 17,000 signatures. He was on the next day. Sign the petition. Damn. They care about petitions. Go and use the hashtag. Use it all over Twitter and do not stop. Because it's not at all set right now. The bill is not set. The provision that Bernie has in there now where he's gonna switch it out, and again, we'll talk more about this in hour two, but I want you guys to know the full context is, and it works with Wyden, et cetera, to say, okay, now we're gonna do a much more complicated runaround around this, and we're gonna try to put that in the bill. So if you're a larger corporation, we're gonna have a tax penalty if you don't get up to that wage. If you're a smaller corporation, we're gonna give you a tax cut to get you up to $15. They have no assurances that anybody's gonna say yes to that. And it's not clear. Everybody can understand $15 minimum wage. Go ahead and try to explain to people, the parliamentarian did this. So I did a run around and I did the tax cuts here and tax increases there. No one is going to understand that. It is not going to work. I love you, but it isn't going to work. For God's sake, don't kill it, Bernie. So for anyone who had a question about whether we, like every other show on the planet, have some sort of loyalty to individuals and politicians and their careers over policy, well, you've got your answer now. I don't care who it is. The only thing that matters is policy. Bernie, you fought for 40 years. Finish it. Don't pull it at the last second because Manchin and Biden want you to do it. Because then you're left holding the bag. I'll leave it on this, guys. I guarantee that if Bernie takes it out of the bill, later they'll say it was his fault. It was Bernie Sanders and the progressives who killed $15 minimum wage. I've seen that movie 1,000 times. No. If they're gonna kill it, let them kill it. Put the corporate Democrats on the record. But we can't do any of it if Bernie takes it out of the bill. You're a budget chair for a reason. Let's go. We've got a progressive in a position of power. Let's use that power. Otherwise, we have no right to complain. And by the way, again, it's not just $15 minimum wage. That means all of our priorities are dead. We could not get to step one. This was supposed to be the easiest thing on the progressive priority list. If we cannot get the easiest one, that means all of our priorities are dead for 4 years. One last thing. On top of that, that means the Democrats are almost certainly going to lose in 22 and 24. They said they would do this. It was a core promise. Immediately, they turn around and go, we were lying. We're never going to do it. You're never going to have higher wages. And even the progressives agreed that you shouldn't have higher wages. Then you're guaranteed losses. And I'm not willing to lose to fascists. I'm not willing to lose to Republicans. That's why we've got to draw the line in the sand and fight right now. All right, we got to take a break. We have so much more on this and much more, and we will read your comments and respond to it when we come back. Sign the petition, use the hashtag, right back on the Young Turks.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Guys, I'm going to read some of your comments because, like I've always say, we do this show together. We're not the Young Turks, you're the Young Turks. And as a prelude to that, let me just explain to you guys. you're it. You're the last line of defense. If you guys put enough pressure on Bernie, we've got a fighter's chance of putting it, keeping it in the bill. If you don't, there are no other progressive groups or anyone else who's going to ride to the rescue here. So, and don't think that I just rushed out and did this without checking. I have checked. The Sanders team knows that they're what our point of view on this is. So far, I have not run into one progressive who says we are wrong on the facts or the policy. So what are we doing? Are we fighting or are we not fighting? If you don't want to fight, yeah, that's fine. But that means you're surrendering. Look here, I'll read Super Chat. Colin wrote in, it's unfortunate that you didn't win your congressional race, Cenk. You would have been absolute legend of a fighter in the House. That's very nice of you to say. Colin, I don't talk much about that because we didn't win and I wish I'd done better for you guys, right? But in this context, I just want you to know that's why I ran. That's why I ran. Because right now, there isn't a single progressive in Congress who's willing to say, guys, the reality is Bernie decides if it's in the bill or not. That's the reality. Now, when we say it on the show, you guys pay attention and you guys can make it viral or not viral, right? But if I was in Congress and I gave that as an interview or a speech on the floor of the House, everybody would instantly be talking about Congressman Uyghur versus Senator Sanders. And because they're elitist in their cores. The media is elitist in their core. So if you have status, they think you're relevant. If you're an outsider like us, they think you're not relevant. If I could have grabbed that mic, we could make a bigger deal. Why? Because we need fighters. We need fighters. You can't win against Manchin and Joe Biden if you don't fight. They have the entire institutional system behind them. By the way, here's another one who's a fighter, Nina Turner. You know who's the only person who came out today? No, actually, there was two people who came out today and said we should still be fighting at $15 minimum wage and we should not give up. Nina Turner and Joe Sandberg. They came, and an article landed today with those two saying, "Do not stop fighting." And then you wonder why I love Nina Turner and Joe Sandberg. So go help Nina win. And my God, if she's in Congress, I never needed to run in the first place. Okay, ninaturner.com/hello. ninaturner.com/hello. We help our friends and allies and we hold everyone accountable. Look, there's so many more of your comments. I wish I had more time for them, but we'll keep talking about it on the show. We'll be right back. Back on Young Turks, Cenk, John, and Jordan with you guys today. John, you got it from here.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was just finishing up signing a petition, but I'm done because it only took a second, actually. So now we can move on with the show. It was really fast, actually. It's actually taking me longer to explain how fast it was to sign this petition. Anyway, let's launch into the news. CPAC's happening, and they brought Ted Cruz. I don't know why, but he came prepared for comedy. If you consider this funny, take a look.
God bless CPAC. I gotta say, Orlando is awesome. It's not as nice as Cancun. But it's nice.
There's nobody in the world that likes self-deprecating humor more than me, but no, people are still suffering in Texas and you're still lying about why you went to Cancun. That makes it not fertile territory for self-deprecating comedy. But this is why he is one of the most despised people in the country. What'd you think? Is he ready for a Comedy Central special?
Yeah, conservatives have never, ever been funny. Ever in the history of humanity. And there's a reason for that. They usually punch down and they're like, ah, isn't it so fun to make fun of people with no power? The poor, right? or men in power going like, women, right? Am I right? Like when Rush Limbaugh died, everybody was talking about like, look, you might disagree with him, but what an amazing entertainer. Has anybody ever listened to Rush Limbaugh's show? He never once made a joke. There was never a punchline. It was always like, black people, right? Right? And everybody laughs like, black people suck. That's not a joke. That's not a joke. That's just you being, let's be polite and say a jerk. And here in this case, at least he's making a joke about himself. Okay, that's much better. But you're joking around about like, oh, remember how I left you guys in the cold and went to the Ritz-Carlton at Cancun? It's almost a little too self-deprecating.
It's also really soon. I mean, he just earlier this week was saying the media is wrong to be so obsessed about this. It's just because they miss Trump. It's not that we should have any standards for our politicians. They were wrong to be mad about this. You can't do all of that and then try to turn it into something that you can try to be charming about or something.
It just doesn't work. He's a deeply unlikable person. And I think you could sense that that unease in the crowd. Like he delivers the joke. Like Letterman loved to do self-deprecating opens. Kind of warms up the crowd, makes you more sympathetic. But for him, it just falls flat. And you could, I mean, there's a few seconds before they really even start to laugh. It's like, I guess it's more of a polite gesture at the end than actually finding him funny. But yeah, like you said, there's still people suffering. There was our friend and I think guest of your show, John, Manny Fidel at Insider pointed out that like, while he's laughing about trying to escape, like there was a kid who died trying to keep his little brother warm in Texas. So like, this is a very grim situation. And it exhibits like the worst examples of late stage capitalism and whether or not that people seem to care, like Cenk says, it's all about punching down from him laughing about this and trying to get away to people like Rush Limbaugh or the recently whatever canceled Star Wars person for making fun of trans people and commenting on different people of different races or ethnicities. It's always about a marginalized group or someone without power. That's where they find humor, and that's ultimately disgusting.
Well, he's got a few other jokes, so let's turn to his material about Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Bernie is wearing mittens. And AOC is telling us she was murdered. And the media desperately, desperately, desperately wants to see a Republican civil war.
That is so bad. Like, I am terrified at the idea of trying to do stand-up comedy. I guess he does have a admirable characteristic. He can't tell when he's being like maxed out cringy. That was so, what was that voice that he did? Was that supposed to be Representative Ocasio-Cortez? Some sort of high-pitched squeal about moitered? She doesn't have that accent. I don't understand any part of that joke.
Yeah. So just real quick, guys, like, none of it makes any sense. And we're gonna get to the substance here. First of all, mittens. Bernie's wearing mittens. So what? I don't get it. So what? What does that mean? Does that mean he's weak or something? I don't know the bizarre and hateful conservative mind. So like, ha, mittens, that shows him. And then they chanted, hang Mike Pence, the rioters did as they were entering the building. It's on tape. So were they planning on murdering someone? Yes. They were running through the halls looking to find Nancy Pelosi. Would they have potentially, they brought a noose, they brought zip ties. Were some of them planning to kidnap people like Nancy Pelosi? Yes, no, there's no question about it. Would a top target have been AOC, especially since she was warned ahead of time about it? Yes, of course, it wouldn't have been some rando backbencher who's not in the news, right? So he's like joking around, oh, my fans, we're almost gonna murder AOC. Isn't that hilarious? No, Ted, I don't find that hilarious. I find you not only monstrous, but you're basically winking and nodding to this grotesque audience at CPAC. Hey, next time, maybe we'll do it right because we all love the idea. We think it's a hoot to think about killing AOC. Now, if a progressive made that joke about Ted Cruz, Oh my God, they'd have congressional hearings and the crying would last a decade.
Yeah.
It's really incredible to see. Oh.
No, go on.
It's incredible to see just kind of how far CPAC has devolved. I was thinking back in preparation for this to kind of the first Obama term and the midterm era CPAC, where the Tea Party was at an all-time high, and whether or not you saw it to be an altruistic movement, I don't. I think it was pretty clear that this is astroturfed. But they were pretty specific about what they were in opposition to. They didn't want universal health care. This is ultimately at the behest of corporate interests. But that and various economic policies that they espoused were kind of the top line messaging at CPAC. And to think about that, Ron Paul was super popular in that area, in that era. But now you basically have these weird culture war grievances taking center stage at this conference, which is a pretty influential moment and establishment in the Republican Party. So it's gone from opposition to Obama's healthcare policies now to Bernie's wearing mittens. Democrats are complaining. I want to go on vacation. Just complete lowbrow culture war BS.
Yeah. Well, we have a few more jokes from Senator Cruz. Let's see what he's got.
I remember there were reports that riots were going to come into suburban, mostly peaceful, fiery, but mostly peaceful. There were reports riots were going to come into the suburbs. I got to tell you, in Houston, where I live, there weren't any rioters. Because let's be very clear, if there had been, they would discover what the state of Texas thinks about the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms.
Oh, I get it. They would have killed all those protesters. That's not very funny, though. Except for that crowd.
Look, guys, this is what I told you. Like, they just outright calling for violence now. Like, oh, what is a protest? A protest is exercising your First Amendment rights. And these are the guys who are pretending, and Cruz's speech, all the CPAC speech, cancel culture. Oh my God, they're trying to cancel us for saying racist things, right? So when Black people say, hey, I also want to protest, and my protest is around, please don't kill me, please don't murder me. Cruz's response is, now remember everybody, grab your weapons and get ready to kill them. Gee, I wonder who the violent ones are, right? And he couches it in terms of riots. Could Kyle Rittenhouse tell what was a riot and not a riot? Could he tell who was innocent and not innocent? Or did he just show up with a weapon and start killing people? I think it was the latter. That's why he's charged with homicide, right? And so this kind of talk creates stochastic terrorism. Now, Ted Cruz can't tell Bob, hey, Bob, go kill someone on my behalf. But what he can say is, now remember, Bob, if Black people ever protest in Houston, grab your guns and do something about it. Okay, well, you're equally clear. The right wing is basically raising their hand and say, we are for violence and murder. That's who they are.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, so should the Capitol Police have been mowing down those Trump supporters as they tried to break into the building? Because let me tell you, that's what the Capitol Police think of the Second Amendment. Would that have been a good thing then? You seem to imply that in certain circumstances, it would be good to mass murder people who are rioting.
Yeah. And by the way, John, to actually be slightly more accurate about that analogy, he's saying the citizens have a Second Amendment right. So what he's saying in that is, if you were to make the equivalent statement from the left, hey, now remember, all progressives out there, you've got a Second Amendment right. So if they try to do a Trump riot wherever you live, go grab your guns and go kill them.
Yeah,
I would never say that because that's insane. But that's what a United States senator is implying right there. You saw it with your own eyes.
Yep, and they kind of liked it. That's the most positive reception Ted Cruz's comments have ever gotten. So it's a sick party, sick ideology. You were talking about sort of the result of this rhetoric. Why don't we turn to one of the possible results of this in our next story? The Capitol attack is just a little bit more than a month in the past. in the near future, we're going to have more events from Joe Biden, a speech to both chambers of Congress. And we're now being warned that that event is the next possible target of domestic terrorists. Acting Capitol Police Chief Yogananda Pittman said, "We know that members of the militia groups that were present on January 6th have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible," talking there about members of Congress. The police chief's warning was made in the context of her trying to justify to Congress why exceptional security measures put in place in the wake of the attack needed to remain until alternatives could be devised. A large area around the Capitol is still surrounded by a 7-foot non-scalable fence, and thousands of National Guard members continue to be deployed. Chief Pittman said that the extremist groups still want to send a symbolic message to the nation, which sounds like the goal of most terror groups, and we know how those tend to play out. She added that the crowd of Trump supporters grew to more than 10,000 that day, and about 800 entered the Capitol building. I know you maybe have been watching Fox News and you've been told that it was no big deal, nothing bad actually happened, but those people are still out there. They think that the big problem with January 6th was that it didn't go far enough, that they weren't successful in tracking down and assassinating politicians. And there are multiple groups out there right now that are desperate to do it. And upcoming events in DC are apparently ones that there is some sort of credible intelligence might be targeted by these groups in the near future. Thoughts?
Yeah, look, guys, it's the same story over and over again. And we can see clearly with these guys, Oath Keepers, etc. They do violence. They've always done violence, and I'm worried to death about it.
Yeah, when you're at this point in an empire where you have nationalistic violence, and you have people willing to storm institutions of power out of a perceived unjust result in a democratic process, that they're willing to do that. And then the segment we just talked about, a senator basically calling for killing protesters, extrajudicial killing of protesters, because they want due process, they want bodily autonomy. When you're at this point, it's tough to think how you come back from it. And that is a real tangible fear that we have, and it's okay to have. But at the same time, I hope people understand that we need to be very cautious with the intelligence state, with the police state insisting, because the justification for this, like, this was ultimately to justify further encampments and barriers around the Capitol. So it's important that we kind of balance both of these things. On Deep Dive on Tuesday, Ken Klippenstein joined to talk about how the FBI accessed cell phone towers on January 6th and also obtained data from members of Congress and their staff. And that is a privacy violation. We should not have an intelligence state that does that. So the justification for all of these types of things, these broaches on your civil liberties, are ultimately because of these sensational events. We saw it in the wake of 9/11, and we're seeing it again here. So I'm just urging people to exercise caution. It's a very real, tangible fear, but also we cannot just unilaterally disarm and let the intelligence state just walk all over our civil liberties.
Yeah, but Biden's president, so what's the worst that could happen? But anyway, Cenk, you had something to say?
Yeah, just real quick, guys. So look, this is a giant problem on both sides. Number one, the right wing believes in violence. So yes, do I believe the authorities that they're planning to do tremendous violence when Biden speaks? Yes, I believe that. Remember, you know, we talk about the rioters in Capitol on January 6th. There was the pipe bombs that they planted too. So they had planned to bomb all different parts of Washington, D.C. Luckily, people who are violent, whether it's terrorists of any ilk or any religion or any political ideology, are usually idiots. So luckily they blew it and they couldn't get those bombs to work. Thank God, right? But so at some point it's gonna work. And so these guys are literally playing with fire. So Godspeed to the authorities on stopping any specific plans by any extremist to do violence. But I'm also concerned that they then use that as an excuse for, all right, no more protests in Washington. No more protests by anybody, no more First Amendment, no more nothing, right? And who are they gonna crack down on first? The right wing? Inconceivable, because all they do is cry. Oh, we're not allowed to do violence anymore, we're so sad. Remember the good old days when we used to declare civil war and kill hundreds of thousands of Americans? Remember the good old days when we used to do lynchings, the right wing in this country? Well, okay, you're not allowed to do lynchings. You're not allowed to commit violence anymore. I know you want to cry over that, right? But they're not going to. In the history of this country, the authorities almost never, ever hold the right wing accountable. What they do instead is immediately target innocent, peaceful left wingers because they view them as a structural challenge to the system. And that's just history, the history of the FBI, the history of every governmental organization in this country. But I will be fair in saying that over the last couple of years, the FBI actually has done a decent job in rooting out some right-wing extremists and stopping their plots before it happens.
Exactly, yeah. A lot of the exact same sorts of militia groups or KKK neo-Nazi groups. There have been a number of plots that have been stopped, and they don't often get talked. It's the weirdest thing, they don't really get talked about. Plots to bomb a Muslim center to start a race war. It's barely news, which is sort of weird. I wonder why. I wonder if it was a different religion, if it would be different. But I did want to also mention in terms of the violence, I'm very glad that both of you talked about the fact that, whether it's the Capitol Police or, people who are saying we need big new legislation, effectively a second Patriot Act when last time I checked, terrorism is illegal. But also, we do have those groups that are waiting out there. And right now, CPAC is going on, and it's effectively like Comic-Con for mouth breathers. And right now we're laughing at Ted Cruz, who is joking about murdering protesters, something like that. This weekend, Donald Trump is going to speak, his first big speech since he went away. And what's the over-under for your sports people's talk of the number of times he will tell these people that the election was stolen, that it was unacceptable, they won by a landslide, what are you gonna do about it? And sure, he's going to do that for the next few years, but there's 5 million people that think Trump is gonna become president again on March 4th? And there are people who are crossing their fingers and really hoping that the State of the Union gets blown up, and he is going to tell them they stole the election again.
Yeah, guys, it's the great unrest has begun. I think mainstream media and mainstream politicians just don't get it. They think things are going to go back to normal. They're not going to go back to normal. 80% of Republican voters don't just like Donald Trump. They love Donald Trump. They didn't just like the violence on January 6th. They love the violence on January 6th. So they're going to do more of it. Trump is going to encourage them. And there's another thing you guys that everybody has to understand. I just talked to two right wingers in back-to-back interviews over the last week.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
They are not getting access to actual information. They only see on their social media and in their traditional media conservative sites and channels. So they don't even have any access to reality at all. This is what a lot of people are missing. And sometimes I think I have to say it clearer and better. They really believe that Joe Biden stole the election. They really believe that democracy is gone because the globalists and the World Health Organization, and I know you think there's no way, they can't, no one really can't believe that. It's in the polls, guys, read the polls. 73% of Trump voters say that Biden did not win the election. So they genuinely believe, like Tom Hanks and Fauci and all these guys work together to steal the election. They genuinely believe it. Why are they doing violence? Because they think, well, I got to get democracy back somehow. I got to get it back from Fauci and Biden. And so, and what would you do if you thought Trump had stolen democracy? That's what they're thinking. And so as long as Trump keeps saying it, and John is absolutely right, Trump's going to come on and give a big speech about how it was stolen from him and everybody should be super angry, and it's going to work, and they're going to get angry, and it's going to create stochastic terrorism. And we will have that ongoing violence for a long time.
There's one thing that I think Trump just desperately craves right now, and it's attention. And you talk about how the social media bubbles shape what right wingers see, but he's effectively deplatformed. So the one thing that he could do to guarantee that he breaks back into that space through news coverage, through secondary commentary, through people talking about him, I would not be surprised if at CPAC he announces he's running for re-election or he's running for 2024. Mitch McConnell kind of signaled it this week, saying he would back him if he ran. He's been rumored to have run. His campaign infrastructure is alive and well. It would allow fundraising, people to pay attention to him, which is what he wants, that flattery. So I would not be surprised if at CPAC, on top of denying the legitimacy of the results of the election, that he would be running for re-election.
Yeah, by the way, Jordan, that's a great prediction. I had not considered that, but why wouldn't he? It would be smart political strategy because it instantly puts him back in the spotlight. And that's the thing that he craves and helps him politically to be back in that spotlight. He would instantly become the leading challenger to Joe Biden. And then and that's reality. That's not a lie. It's not a trick. It's true. And then so that he's back in the spotlight. And now, everybody, all the media will say there's nothing we can do. We got to pay attention to what Donald Trump says. So wait for it. It's almost certainly going to happen. If he doesn't do it at the CPAC speech, he'll do it some other time relatively soon. And Mitch McConnell surrendering. Well, look, I mean, it goes two ways, right? One, that was quick. I told you, Mitch, you had lost. When he gave that big so-called fiery speech after voting to acquit Donald Trump, he's like, oh, but I am going to hold him accountable. What he did was outrageous. I was like, BS, he's going to fold. And you know what happened? The legendary Mitch McConnell, tough guy of all time, folded like a cheap suit. Folded immediately, folded within what, 2 weeks? So the only upside of it was to see now Mitch McConnell on top of Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and everyone else, humiliated, now groveling at the feet of Donald Trump. Legendary Mitch McConnell go, I think he can run and win. I like him. And the guy didn't read it, Donald. I didn't read it. Yeah, that's what we thought, Mitch.
All right. Take a break.
Yeah, we got to take a break. Guys, sign the petition. Already over 1,000 of you have signed it. Keep going, keep going. tyt.com/petitions/ don't kill it, Bernie. Don't kill it, Bernie. Use hashtag don't kill it, Bernie. Bernie Sanders is considering taking minimum wage out of the bill, the COVID relief bill. That would end the $15 minimum wage possibility. Go to the petition, sign it, use the hashtag. We've got to put pressure on Bernie Sanders to not take it out of the bill. Thank you. We'll be right back. During the break, as you all know, if you're watching on YouTube or Twitch, we read some of your comments and talk to you guys. First of all, shout out to folks who just joined on YouTube by hitting the join button below. Miss Hips, Joseph, Bernie Knuckles, Corrine Hayes. Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate it. On YouTube Super Chat, Sue Farr says, strong intro, Jenk. Love you all. Thank you, TYT Army Strong. Well, that's what we're down to, guys. It's not an exaggeration to say that the only thing that has a chance of stopping them killing $15 minimum wage is you guys, the TYT Army, literally. 0083 writes in, hey, Cenk, I signed the petition. I have a question, since the Democrats won't help us get $15 an hour, are we raising money for 22 and 24 yet? No, guys, that's another petition. I don't want to talk about it today. We'll come back to it later. But no, I'm not going to raise any money for or ask you guys to volunteer for anyone who doesn't fight for $15 minimum wage. It's not just the minimum wage. It's not just higher wages. It's every progressive priority. If you fold on that, there's no hope for anything. No hope at all. So no, I'm not going to ask you to volunteer or donate to Bernie Sanders or any other politician. Kamala Harris. Okay. Look, Kamala Harris says yes, it passes reconciliation and goes forward like the overwhelming majority of Democratic voters want. And by the way, a huge majority of all Americans want. Then great. I mean, yes, donate, volunteer. We'll do whatever you want with Kamala Harris, because actions have consequences. But if she says, no, I'm going to kill it. If Bernie doesn't kill it, I'll kill it. Then that's it. And let's get them all on the record. Never, ever give money or donate or volunteer to a corporate Democrat who votes against minimum wage. By the way, if so-called progressives vote against minimum wage, you shouldn't do that for them either. Keep it real. I'm not raising money for any of them anymore. You know how much Young Turks has raised? We've raised $5 to $10 million for Democrats. And that's not my money, guys. I put in two, but that's your money, right? No, you don't get to take the money and then say, hey, I'm trying to do Joe Manchin a favor. No, that's not how it works, okay? So don't give to any of them if they're not willing to do the bare minimum.
Cenk, could we start fundraising for primary challengers? Could we do that?
Yeah, definitely. NinaTurner.com/hello. She's very clear on the record, not just being in favor of $15 minimum wage. Every Democrat lied about that and pretended they were in favor of it. They were almost all universally lying. They didn't mean any of it. But Nina comes out and fights for it when her seat is on the line. The corporate Democrats will turn against Nina Turner. So she's willing to fight for it when she's in the most precarious position. NinaTurner.com/hello. That I'll get behind 1,000%, okay? Everybody else can go kiss our collective asses if they're not gonna fight now when we need them. But we'll do it 6 years from now? No, you won't. And you certainly won't do it with our help. God, I can't get past one comment here because I get so worked about all of it. But to all the people on Twitch, thank you too for participating. We'll be back. Turks, Cenk, John, and Jordan with you guys. By the way, I said that over 1,000 people had signed the petition, don't kill it, Bernie. Now it's over 1,800, nearly 2,000 people. Keep it going. So tyt.com/petition/don't kill it, Bernie, and use it as a hashtag too, because it's Bernie's decision as the budget chair to keep it in the bill or take it out of the bill. I don't want any weak sauce about later we're going to make Walmart kind of pay for it, maybe if we're lucky, and Manchin and Sinema give us their permission, which they won't. No, it's called $15 minimum wage. It's called, the hashtag is fight for 15. Fight for 15. It's not ask Joe Manchin for permission for 15. Okay,
that's not trendy.
Yeah, it's not as trendy.
Apologies in advance if this news makes you blue. Don't worry, you won't be as blue as Jordan. Anyway,
all right. I don't know what's going on. I don't know.
Dr. Manhattan on the power
so
panel.
So bizarre.
That's okay.
Let's keep going. Haunting hat image.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. Allegedly, in response to rocket attacks against American forces in the region, the Biden administration has launched airstrikes inside of Syria. This is early Friday, launched half a dozen missiles on a Syrian site that it described as depots used by Kataib Hezbollah and Kataib Sayyid al-Shuhada, two Iranian-backed Iraq militias it claimed were behind a deadly 15th of February attack on an American base in northern Iraq, and another from the 22nd of February on its embassy in Baghdad. Now, supposedly, these were intended to be some sort of proportional response to the attacks against the US forces, which left one person dead. These strikes may have killed at least 22 people, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a credible monitoring group based in London, potentially prompting an unexpected blowback against the first military action ordered by President Joe Biden. And that group that we just talked about says that the airstrikes have left great human and material losses, specifying the destruction of three trucks loaded with ammunition. Another source told Reuters that at least 17 people were killed in the airstrike. No official count has actually been put out yet. Perhaps we'll have that at some point. So it took a few weeks, but we're back into it. And we'll have to see, you know, if the Biden administration's approach to Syria and the greater region is going to be significantly different from the Trump administration's or from Barack Obama's. But we're launching airstrikes. There's been no massive like plans for reducing our involvement in the region. And so not getting off on the right foot in some of these international conflicts from my point of view.
Okay, so first of all, let's just note, we're what, 2 months? No, we're barely a month into the Biden administration. We're bombing Syria and we're killing the minimum wage. Great start. And by the way, it wasn't 2000, it was 1400. Okay, maybe you let them slide on that because with the 600, it gets to 2000. But you know what? We're probably going to limit it to people who only make 50,000 or less. And by the time you get, if you make 50,000, you get almost nothing, right? So the middle class getting that relief bill under COVID, just kidding. In other words, we've reneged on every single promise. And now we proved the right wingers right, because instantly the Democrats are more militaristic than Trump was. So how's that hope and change thing coming along for us? So look, some people say, well, okay, Cenk, but you know Biden's better than Trump. Of course, that's why I told you to vote for Biden. Yes, we don't have a fascist who destroyed democracy in charge. Congratulations. If that's good enough for Joe Biden, that he cleared the fascist bar, no, not good enough for any of the rest of us. And so then for the folks who are saying, no, that's okay, we'll hold him accountable later. This is later. He's the president. This is when you hold him accountable. You don't hold him accountable after he's president. So I've got mainstream Democrats all over my social media posts going, Cenk, now is not the time. Are you kidding? When is the time? He just bombed Syria. And get a load of the insanity of that bombing. They're like, oh no, we're trying to send a message by doing a low level response to Iran. Now reports that they might've killed 22 people. By the way, none of them were Iranian. Wait, if we're striking back against Iran that did a bombing on February 15th in our bases, we think through a militia group, but not directly, and we're not positive. Why do we kill 22 randos in Syria? Now I get it, they say, oh, nah, kind of militia. And that was the other thing, was also kind of a militia. So I just killed a bunch of people and hope for the best. No, no. Bombing them is what created the problem. Biden doubling down on it is not what any progressive is interested in.
Yeah.
It's this type of response, like bombing militias or enemy combatants, whatever, only leads to exponential growth in the region of other people who hate the United States and will just sympathize with whoever you just attacked. And what I think needs to be stressed is this is a campaign and an administration that said they wanted to restore relations with Iran. They wanted to re-enter the Iran nuclear deal. And before any meaningful diplomacy was attempted, they bombed Iranian-backed Iraqi militias in Syria. Now, one person unilaterally approved that. That is galling. So we have to talk about the AUMF, how we understand it, the importance of repealing it, and imposing restrictions on what a president can do. Because this is disgusting. I'm thankful TYT is centering the people who were killed in this attack, because like you say, across the board, nobody was really talking about the effects. It was Biden did this. It was a defensive measure. We shouldn't even be in Iraq in the first place. You can't claim defense when you're in a country that you shouldn't have been in for the past 20 years or so. So it's absolutely bogus justifications, but it's ultimately to perpetuate a forever war at the behest of corporate interests and military interests. The Raytheon and Lockheed, I'm sure, are ecstatic tonight.
Yeah. And yeah. I wanted to just close the loop on something we were talking about earlier by reading just a quick tweet from Ken Klippenstein, who said, "We assassinate people by drone strike and have a literal prison colony in Guantanamo. But where we draw the line is ignoring the Senate parliamentarian when he says no to a minimum wage hike." I believe it's a woman, but yes. Yeah. Some rules matter, some international rules, not necessarily so much.
Yeah, so look, as always, part of the problem is the media. They pretend that the parliamentarian has power when she has no power at all. It's just a figurehead giving advice. I'm giving advice to Bernie Sanders. Keep the minimum wage in the COVID relief bill. I'm just as relevant as a parliamentarian. Okay. And then when we do bombings, what does the media do? Almost universally cheers it and makes excuses for it. It was a limited bombing. Well, not so much for the 22 dead people. That had a lot of impact on them, okay, and all of their family members. And then they say, well, he chose the path that was the most moderate. Really? Murder was the most moderate path? I can think of more moderate paths. And here, let's be constructive. Well, what would have been the better path? Joe Biden is president of the United States now. He was part of the administration that struck the Iran deal. We're back in the Iran deal, just as it was. That's it. I solved it. Look at that. And whose policy was it? It was Obama and Biden's policy. Wait a minute. You must be thinking, Cenk, you got that wrong, right? Why are we not back in the deal if Biden is the one that made the deal in the first place? No. It's just like war. So, we're going to renegotiate the Iran deal. Why? You said that Trump killing that Iran deal was insanity. So why don't you just go back into the same exact deal? Neocons and the war machine put pressure on me to now renegotiate a new deal. Well, why did you listen to them? Well, if you listen to them, then you're a warmonger. That's who you are. Go back into the deal we made. No, not we. You made, Joe Biden. You made the deal. Why don't you just go back into that deal instead of trying to kill people? Why do you think Iran attacked in the first place? We killed their lead general and we backed out of the deal. No, you're not allowed to say that. We're not. Okay. So, but I'm not the one saying, Joe Biden said it during the campaign. He said it was Trump's fault. Then why don't you re-enter the deal you wrote? I can't be any more constructive than that. It's not just blind anger. It's not just critique. It's not criticism. It's just telling you to do the most obvious thing in the world. The American people don't want to be in wars in the Middle East anymore. The right wing doesn't want it. The left wing doesn't want it. And as usual, corporate Democrats choose the dumbest strategy and go, well, I know, but the military industrial complex, our corporate donors, and everybody in DC wants more war, more death. So we're going to take a position that is deeply unpopular with the entirety of the American people to make Washington happy. Well played. Joe Biden won this election by 43,000 votes in three states. Otherwise, he would have lost the Electoral College. You think he's going to hold a 43,000 razor thin advantage in a country of 330 million people when he does two things, killing the minimum wage hike and bombing people that are both massively unpopular with every cross section of Americans? Corporate Democrats, no one punches themselves in the face better than they do. Okay, so guys, we got to take a break. Everybody, you got to check out Deep Dive. That's Jordan's show on Twitch, twitch.tv/TYT. He is not blue in that show. He's just blue on this show.
It's underwater. Okay. It's thematic.
Yeah, it looks like it's underwater. Something went wrong, obviously, with his camera while we're doing the show. That's why we're kidding around about it. But Tuesdays and Thursdays, twitch.tv/TYT. John, of course, is the legendary Dragon Daddy at The Damage Report. And everybody check out Damage Report, but you already are. And then the last thing is now, not only is the petition now over 2,000 people signed it, it's trending on Twitter. So keep it going, brothers and sisters. Dang. Instantly trending within the hour. TYT.com/petitions/don't kill it, Bernie. It is so that Bernie does not take the $15 minimum wage out of the COVID relief bill. It's our job as his allies, his friends, to get him to do the right thing. We don't care about protecting Democratic colleagues. They are not our colleagues. They're not our allies. If you're against the $15 minimum wage, you are not at all my colleague or ally. In fact, you're my opponent. That's who Manchin, Sinema, and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris is. Bernie, make them vote on it. If you don't make them vote on it, we have no chance. It's use hashtag don't kill Bernie. Don't kill it, Bernie. Also, don't kill him. Hashtag don't kill it, Bernie. Okay, sorry.
Regular Ted Cruz over here.
Yeah, I know, right? Hashtag don't kill it, Bernie, about the $15 minimum wage. We're trying to help. We're not trying to hurt, but you're on the wrong path. It's go use it now. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.